Welcome to episode number 303 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to cover a little bit of a Media Sucks Monday. Today's topics are going to include things from talking about different ways that we can help boys process emotions. That's right, often boys have the hardest time. We're also going to cover an article on a couple of counter-arguments to not all public school teachers are the devil. Also, the big viral video that went out there, several of you guys sent this in to me about the camera that caught teachers grabbing the kindergartner by the face. Yes, we are going to talk a little bit about that. Also, an article about a 7-year-old boy who got kicked out of school for groping a girl. We're going to stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is May the 19th, 2014. Our topic for today is our Media Sucks Monday segment. That's right. Media Sucks Monday is the show where we pull in relevant media articles that you guys send to me, the audience, to help say, hey, Trey, what do we want to talk about? We want to talk about this. We're going to take your questions, your comments about these different articles. What are some of our thoughts? Guys, on Media Sucks Monday, I can't take them all. And I can only do the ones that I select out very specifically. Most of them are the ones that fascinate me or that interest me or that I find relevant. So if you sent your show in and it didn't make it, it's probably because there wasn't enough. There was one enough time, and I had too many already. Or in some cases, they're not fascinating to me. And so I don't mean that hurtfully or mean. It's just an issue of if I'm not interested in it, I'm going to bore the crap out of you guys when I talk about it. So anyway, but shoot those in, because if you got a good one, we want to throw it out there. We've got a couple of people that have kind of pseudo talked about wanting to become article diggers, and that's what I'm looking for. It's just folks that are willing to dig articles out that are relevant, that are good, that y'all want to talk about here, so we can cover them at the Family Podcast Network. Maybe on a Media Sucks Monday, I would love to make the MSM show something that is weekly. So consider doing that. Shoot those over to us. Before we get into that, guys, let's get into some quick housekeeping. If you want to get notified of all the new episodes that come out on the Family Podcast, make sure you jump over to thefamilypodcast.com over on the right-hand side. Make sure you enter in your name and your email address. When you do that, you get put on a special list that keeps you notified when all the new shows come out of Family Podcast. To make sure you don't miss out on that one show if you just could have known about. It could have changed everything. Guys, also don't forget to share this out. Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, all that other good jazz. Yeah, you know you can share on Pinterest. A lot of people do. They like to share these things out there. They share the actual show through the picture and whatnot. So anyway, however you want to do it, you can email it to somebody, all that different kind of stuff. But make sure the other folks out there that need to get in touch with this information can do it. They're not going to do it if you don't point them this way. I can do all that I want. But the reality is you guys are way more powerful when it comes to all of that stuff. You want to become a member of the show? That's right. If you want to become a PTAC or Parents for the Ethical Treatment of Adolescents and Kids, that's our funny little pitch there. To say, if you want to support the show at 30 cents per episode, if you feel like you're getting 3 dimes out of every single one of these in ideas and information, etc., if you feel like you're getting supported and finding out, hey, I am not the only one that goes through this kinds of stuff, consider becoming a member. That's right. 3 dimes per episode. You can do it at $5 a month. You can also do it at $50 a year. You do get access to premium membership stuff available only to members. Last, guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, like we talked about earlier for topics for Media Sucks Monday, shoot them into us. We want to hear what you want to talk about. We want to talk about what you want to talk about. A lot of ways that you can do that. You can always email us at TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com. That is right. That is TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com. You can also hit the SpeakPipe app over on the right-hand side of TheFamilyPodcast.com. You'll see where it has a little green button that says Ask Trey and Jeff a Question. You can ask us a question for the Real Family Guys podcast or the Family Podcast Network. Ask your question first, then give us the details. Also, guys, you can always go to any of the contact us stuff, or you can call us at 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT and the number 0. I do want to say thank you to our listener, Philip. who jumped on to SpeakPipe the other day and left a fantastically wonderful and funny message on SpeakPipe the other day. That cracked me up, brother. And I mean, like, literally, I'm not just saying that because, like, oh, how kind, how sweet that you did that. I mean, literally, I laughed until I cried. So thanks for that message, and I appreciate the encouragement on that as well. Last, and most certainly not least, I do want to throw out a couple things. This is going to seem self-patting on the back, and some of it is kind of that. I'm going to be real frank with you guys. However, on the flip side of that, I also want to point some of you guys, if you didn't catch this episode, some of the feedback. This feedback actually came from Stacy. She said, love, love, loved the podcast titled Girls and Relationships. Why is it harder on them? I'll be one of the first to buy the book that you guys are co-authoring. My wife and I are working on a book right now. The question, where do you find your identity, mid-show, hit me really hard, brought me to tears. Thank you, it helped me. And I have to think about it a lot. I think this show hits the nail on the head a lot, and if not all, of women. Keep on, Gibsons. God bless. That is a particularly good episode, especially if you are a lady or if you're raising a kiddo, a girl. We talk a little bit about why are breakups in girls harder. It's not because y'all are weaker. I disbelieve that in a fullest sense. That's not what that's about. It's that I believe personally you guys get socialized to take that harder, to find more of your identity in your relationships rather than your accomplishments and the things that you're capable of. Anyway, you're going to want to go listen to that episode. It's a good one. If you haven't checked it out, make sure that you back up and check out the relationship. Girls on Relationship, why is it harder on them? Also, thank you, Stacy, for sending that in to us. We really appreciate it. All right, guys, with all of that out of the way, let's jump into the meat and potatoes of today's show. We are going to have another episode of our Media Sucks Monday show. This is the show where we go over articles that you guys from the audience send to us. And we talk a little bit about what you guys want to talk about and why much of what is out there on the internet in terms of the media sucks. Not all of it does. We're going to talk some about those. Some of them really are bad. Some of them are good. But today, we're going to cover this episode of Media Sucks Monday. We're going to have quite a few topics. I think these are going to be heavy hitters and ones that you guys are going to enjoy. First article that we're going to jump into today is an article from Psychology Today. Jim always sends these in to me, and they're fantastic. He always monitors the Psychology Today show. If I'm not mistaken, I think Jim is an LPC. But he shoots these over to me, and he's one of my best recruiters for psychological-based stuff, and I love it. But one of the articles that he sent today really kind of interested me. It was 4 ways to help boys process emotions. There's no doubt that the first thing that I want to say is I think that we over-genderize. I'm totally making this word up. It sounds like tenderize, but we over-genderize this idea of emotions, and we have a tendency to ascribe certain emotions to females and certain emotions to men that I think are both unfair, that in many cases it's not about gender. It's about, if anything, it's about socialization. They're told that they can't do that, right? So big boys don't cry, right? I mean, that's not true. Boys can cry just as much as girls. However, we're often tell them, you know, suck it up, don't cry, you know, be a man, right, and all this other stuff. And we tell them to suppress those levels of emotions and whatnot. We also say things like girls are overly emotional. Well, you know, I've met plenty that are. I've met plenty that needed to get a good dose of emotions just like anybody else. Or just like some men I know. And so I think we have a tendency to overdo some of the stuff that we ascribe to certain genders. But there's no doubt that in a generalized sense, there does seem to be some differences in how males versus females handle emotions. Now, you can probably chalk a lot of this up to just how they're socialized. So what do you mean, Trey? What do you mean when you say socialized? What are you trying to say? What we're talking about is what does society teach us that we're supposed to do, what we're supposed to not do, how we're supposed to react and respond, how we're supposed to feel a certain things. That's called, in the most finest sense, socialization. And so a lot of this stuff that kids go through is just socialized into them. But again, I think we can find, if nothing else, that we need to learn how to respond to those things in kind, even if it is a socialization. Or maybe these really are genetic differences that vary between the male and the female species. So anyway, we're going to jump into these, and they're basically just 4 different ways that they recommend handling or helping boys process emotion. These are not circumspect only to boys. You can also use these in girls as well. But number one, This is the action release model. Boys frequently process and release feelings in a quick burst of energy and often in conjunction with physical movement. Yeah, I've seen that quite a bit, even in my boy. This means that sometimes it's actually helpful to let a boy stomp out of the room if he's upset, assuming that he does so in a respectful way. You might want to resist your inclination to order his immediate return to discuss things and instead go let him run or immerse himself in a video game until he settles down. After perhaps a half-hour break, re-engage him in calm discussion. Whenever you start talking about feelings, encourage him to pace around the room if he wants. Let him fidget in his chair, tap his foot or hand, or even look away and breathe deeply. His body is primed to move, and that is a great way to help him kinesthetically process feelings. I love that. I think we have a tendency to try and control our children, what they think, what they feel, and how they are responding to us entirely too much. In other words, what I'm saying is I think we micromanage our children's emotions, especially negative ones. Negative emotions make most all of us uncomfortable. We do not like negative emotions. So what do I want to say when I say a negative emotion? What I'm not trying to say, maybe I should say an uncomfortable emotion. Those emotions that don't necessarily leave us feeling comfortable and fun and warm and fuzzy on the inside. That can mean things like fear, anxiety, anger, frustration, and those kinds of things, right? Those are uncomfortable to us. And when we see our kids expressing uncomfortable emotion, it has a tendency to bother us. And we often are telling them to quit doing this, stop moving. What you talking about? What you talking about? Right? We get like that, like the old Bill Cosby stand-up comedy when he's talking about, what you talking about? Jeffrey. It's a lot like that. And I agree. And sometimes kids, in reality, produce extra anxiety. There's no doubt. The little girl that we are going to be adopting, a quick aside on that, we got a phone call just today, and it looks as though everything may be getting stepped up big time. There are some security risks. For those of you guys that are wondering, I'm being very vague in what we're talking about here. I am going to be adopting a little girl for OPSEC, for operational security. I can't divulge a whole lot of information about the story or even her name at this point. We can't release pictures of her at this point because the mom has some gang affiliations that we have to be very cognizant of, especially with Facebook and whatnot, and how quickly pictures can spread. And so you're going to hear me being very vague today, and I apologize for that. It's just operational security. However, the family member that this little girl has been staying with as we've been getting licensed for foster. She called today and said that mom, who has never been showing up before to like the house, she's been using substances and prostituting and things like that. All of a sudden, started showing up today, and she thinks that now she's aware that this little girl has been coming to stay with us, and that this little girl has now started referring to us as mom and dad, and so she thinks that now her physical safety. A little girl's physical safety may be threatened. So it looks as though she may be coming to stay with us sooner than we thought. So plus one praise for all you guys out there who are keeping track of that situation. That's good for us, but it comes in a scary way. However, going back to that, while she was staying with us, one of the things that we noticed was that she would all when we would take her to a new place, like to the first time she went with us to church, or the first time that she went to a nice restaurant with us, or the first time that she went over to Meemaw's house, she would just go bananas, man, just running around, head twisting, flipping, flopping, just going berserk. And you know, it's real easy to look at that behavior and say this is some kind of behavioral thing that we need to correct. And one of the things that when I started catching myself doing that, I started saying, let's look at this differently, Trey. This is a brand new place, and she's got a brand new family with a brand new set of environment. Now she's in a brand new environment inside her new environment. So, I mean, how worked up and nervous is she? So I said, you know, let's treat this like anxiety instead of treating it like a behavioral problem. So instead of fussing at her and getting on to her or whatever else, instead, she was acting up two people down. This is at the restaurant we were at. She was acting up and doing her thing two kiddos down. So I had her come over and sit next to me. And she sat next to me. And instead, I just sat there and I just stroked her head and just patted her shoulder, rubbed her back very, very tenderly. All the things that I would do if she just had a bad dream, basically. And we started watching as things started coming down. So the action release method can be a very big way. Let kids understand that sometimes the things that you're seeing are a reaction to an emotional component, and there's nothing wrong with letting a kid go off, blow off some steam, and then follow back up. But my biggest thing is you need to follow up the same day on what you talked about, and you need to follow up quickly. We're talking within that 1 hour mark of when it happens, because you want to catch it fresh. You want to catch it where you can get it talked about in the best way. So I love the action release method. So good find here. Number two, the suppression delayed reaction method. Boys will often suppress an emotional response, force it underground, in order to focus on the immediate instrumental problem they need to solve or the job they need to do, or B, give other brain centers time to catch up and process activity in the emotive and verbal centers. Although long-term continual stuffing of a boy's emotion is unhealthy, suppressing and delaying impulse reactions can be a temporary solution to show a strong emotional intelligence and character. It can actually provide the distance necessary to cope safely with an issue. As a parent, you can acknowledge your son's initial need for distance while still expressing a desire to help him verbally deal with that issue when he's feeling more settled. Giving him a choice when, where, and how to talk about the issue may enhance the feeling of safety and necessary for him. There is nothing wrong when kids are going nutso and they need to step away for a little bit to just step back and let them shove it down. It's okay. Teaching kids how to suppress emotions is not a bad thing. Now, you're going to hear a lot of psychologists and counselors and therapists, they're going to say, oh, you never want to stuff your feelings, you never want to stuff your emotions, and that is absolutely not true. There are certain situations, there are certain people that can't be trusted, there are certain situations that's not appropriate, where it is perfectly fine to know, how do I shove this stuff down and put a lid on it for now? However, there must be a converse skill set that's involved with that, is that you've got to know, when am I going to sit down and when am I going to deal with this? For me, I don't need to wait too long after that personally. Like for me personally, I don't need to wait too long after it happens. Now, that doesn't mean in the middle of a moment that I don't need to be able to sit on it and chill out and be okay. What that does mean is that later, within 30, 45 minutes to an hour, I know I need to come back to that. But it's okay for kids to cram that stuff down and learn how to suppress it. So one, they may kind of blow outwards a little bit, but as long as you're not hurting anybody or tearing property up, that's fine. They may blow inward, and they may sit there and kind of go inwards and stuff it all down and bottle it up. That's okay for a short period of time, but it is up to us to teach them that. We've still got to go back to unhealthy stuff and bring it back up. If that's been happening a lot, you may find them very resistant to this, because it's easier, it is absolutely easier to just sit on it and keep it bottled up in most cases. Instead of letting it come back out, it keeps it from getting uncomfortable again. So you may have a kiddo who resists or absolutely fights you on this tooth and nail. So anyway, and that's okay. That's okay, but we need to teach them that it's very important that eventually they come and sit back down and we try again. The next one, number three, is the displacement objectification method. Boys sometimes need a projected object or story with which to process their emotions. This object or story helps the boys view emotions from a safe distance, a less vulnerable and more analytical perspective. For example, say your 10-year-old is missing his brother who has gone off to college. When you bring up the subject, they may resist discussing their feelings. Later, you may notice that the baseball mitt he used to play catch with his brother has been thrown into the back of the closet. He might pick up the mitt, turn it over in your hand, and remark how too bad it is that the mitt is not in use. The object can provide an opportunity for the boy to discuss his feelings of loss and being similarly discarded. He might express aloud this grief and sadness, or he may not, but you can be sure that in seeing that object in your hand, he is feeling a lot of emotion. That's actually a really brilliant thing. We used to do that. I would do that frequently in therapy with kids that just, not the ones that would lock up and not want to talk to me, but the kids who would talk to me, but really they would kind of steer the conversation away from that. They never really, they never really could connect with that. Often I would call mom and dad and say, hey, listen, I'm having a hard time getting them to open up. Can I have an object, can I have dad's old baseball shirt he used to wear or something that's significant? And I never had a parent that couldn't, or a grandparent or whoever was taking care of him that couldn't figure out, oh yeah, and bring something with him. And we'd leave it on the table that I was sitting at, as we would get to talking. And then 9 times out of 10, that would get him talking about it. Having that sitting there right there stirs the emotional pot a little bit and often opens him up to wanting to talk about it. So if they've got a new friend who left, pulling out an old photo and sitting that out where they can see it or something like that while you visit with them might be enough to kind of start that process going. And remember, we want the emotions going. We want them to deal with them. We want them to process with them. And we want to start talking about creating healthy ways we can view certain things. And you can't do it if it stays bottled up. Last but not least is number four, Thanks again to Jim for sending this article to us over at Psychology Today. The Physical Expression Method. This method shows up when a boy hits the tabletop to release his anger or punches his fist into other hand to release stress. The physical expression of anger may be a method that worries most parents. Too many men in history have had marriages that have not just hit objects, but people, shifting from healthy aggression to or anger release to destructive violence. Women especially have a great deal of understandable fear about this method due to the violence of some men. However, just because this method has been misused does not mean it is inherently wrong way to deal with emotions. For many boys, physical expressions is the best way to clear their minds for productive processing. Often, in order to put their feelings into words, they must first put those feelings into action. Once the adrenaline has been dissipated through physical activity, they are much better able to do cognitive work necessary to process their emotions. See, I love this. We have a tendency, I think, to be hyper-vigilant about boys that, you know, knot up their fists or punch walls. I mean, not punch walls, but, you know, punch fists or hit pillows or stuff like that. And we get trepidatious about that. Again, I think this article nails it. The reasoning behind it being is I think they're afraid they're going to grow up to become, you know, angry little hitters and smack their wives and wear, you know, demand sandwiches and wear wife beaters, right? And that's not the case. It can become the case if they get a taste for doing that and we don't visit with them as parents. But the reality is the natural desire, in many cases it's a natural desire to bleed a large quantity of emotional stuff into something is not uncommon. And them doing it in something that doesn't destroy someone else's property or someone else's stuff is not uncommon. I had a session years ago where I was with a kid who had lost both his mom and his dad, and he was living with grandparents, and this kid was brimming. And I asked the grandma and grandpa's permission, and they gave it to have a session in his room one day, door open, but we sat in there, and this little kid proceeded to destroy every one of his toys. And I sought mom and the grandma and grandpa's, you know, permission not to do it. But this kid just had so much junk built up, and he just broke toys, cracked them, bit them, chewed pieces off of them, threw them down. Now he as out of control as he seemed, he was so very in control. He would throw a toy, but he would never throw it at a wall. He would never throw it at a window. He always threw it straight down on the carpet. It was interesting to watch. It really was. But this physical expression method is not necessarily a bad thing. We do need to be cognizant of what it can become. We need to talk to him about when is that not okay. We don't want him doing it in the middle of playtime and stuff like that at school or whatever else. So we need to teach that there are a set of rules that will help them out if they choose to follow them. But letting kids express things through emotions can be a great thing, especially physiology is very fascinating. And we really do get an adrenaline dump and into our bloodstream whenever we're emotionally charged. They call that emotional arousal. And when we are, we get a huge adrenaline dump, and it needs to be reuptaked as quickly as possible to be able to start thinking clearly again. So allowing them to do that in some ways can be good. Again, you do have to – a lot of people will always, Trey, what if it turns into blah, blah? Then we handle it when it does. You know, I mean, so many people freak out about this. But the reality is that you teach them just like anything else. If a kid's learning how to drive a car and he's getting to where he speeds too much, what do? We don't take the car away from him. We teach them how to not speed, or we teach them how to use the cruise control. Anyway, physical expression method. So, again, that is the suppression delayed, displacement objectification. Yeah, you guys don't care about those titles. That's for nerds like me. Anyway, I will have a link to that that article, if you want to go check it out more on 4 ways to help process boys' emotion. Great little article. Thanks again, Jim, for sending that in. Okay, our next article was sent to me from a lady named Ellen. And it says, behold, the absolutely two worst arguments against homeschooling. This comes from the Matt Walsh blog. Traditionally in the past, I have not liked Matt Walsh. Many of his stances that he has that we actually agree on, he and I will actually agree on him, he takes too militant of a stance, and I think that he wants to litigate and legislate too many personal beliefs that, once again, I agree with him, and I think he's right in the perspectives on him, but he wants to deny other people their ability to choose what we feel is a wrong thing, and that's wrong. You do not take away a person's ability to choose something so long as that choice is not hurting other people without good willful cause or damaging property that they do not have permission to damage. That's the only time, that's the only thing legislation I think should be used for in a federal government sense is for protecting the freedom to choose, right? And not necessarily the best things for us, but that's a choice we should have. Anyway, so he and I have disagreed in the past because of that reasoning that he's used for some of the hot button topics. I'm not even going to bring them up here. I considered bringing some of those topics up today, but they don't matter. They just don't matter because it's okay for people to choose. However, I did like this article, and I'm going to read you guys real quick. The format here is that somebody wrote Matt an email probably about homeschooling and his perspectives and about how they were terribly disappointed. What always fascinates me is that this guy was very militant with Matt, and I think we have a tendency whenever we do these things, whether it's audio podcasts or the written word like a blog, we attract people like ourselves. And one thing I do want to say to my listeners out here is the folks that I have that engage me regularly, you guys make me proud to be myself, if that doesn't sound too dumb. But anyway, I think he's attracting people a lot like himself, but he was kind of snarky with Matt. But I'm just going to summarize this a little bit and jump right into his points. He goes, I've been a pretty decent fan, though I don't always agree with sometimes what you write. It doesn't bother me that you seem to be proud of your lack of a college education. You seem to be one of the lucky few smart enough people to get away with having no real education to speak of. Congratulations. What I can't reconcile myself is with your vitriol and hatred for the public education and your insistence on peddling homeschooling like it is somehow the answer to all of our problems. So I'm going to skip on down. Studies aside, I'd like to see your response to these two points. Number one, the flaws in our public school system have to do with the parents. Parents send their kids to school and think their job is done instead of being involved in their child's education. How can one system ever improve if the involved parents pull out and do their own thing? We have a responsibility not only to our family but to our community. Homeschool parents hurt their communities when they isolate themselves and remove their children from our academic institutions. If we don't help the system will not work. What a total load of bullcrap. What's this guy's name again? Dan, I wish that you were writing to me. Well, probably not. You'd probably be pretty pissed off at me. But let's break this down. The flaws in our public school have to do with parents. First off, I don't disagree with that. I think a huge piece of that is that parents have gotten to the point where they do a couple of things. Number one, we've gotten lazy as parents. We do not want to do what we need to do, just like Dan says in here, and I think he's right. We don't want to do what we need to do to take part in our kids' educations. We expect to drop them off, and we don't want to have anything to do with that. Now, that's going to make it sound like I'm saying, so if we go to public schools, but we also supplement with our help on the side, then our kids have what we need. I want to be straight here about something. If I drop my kids off for 8 freaking hours in a day, I expect them to be able to learn something worth a crap. I'm sorry, this one always frustrates me. What a load of junk. It would be better if I'm going to send my kids to something to spend 8 hours, they should be able to come out with some level of education that is significant, and they're not. They're coming out great test takers, or they're coming out thinking they're horrible because they can't take tests well. They can't memorize arbitrary information that doesn't really matter and is not pertinent to them and what they want to do. If I'm going to send my kids off for that long, the system is screwed up if they're not learning something. How can the system ever improve if the involved parents pull out and do their own thing? Let's be very clear here, Dan. The reason why people are pulling their kids out is because the system is not improving, whether they are involved in their education or not. We have a responsibility not to our own family but to our community. Seriously, is this guy a communist? I'm not trying to be funny here. I'm not trying to be, you know, the old Salem witch trial communist version that happened in the 60s here. I mean, seriously, we have a responsibility to ourselves. We have a responsibility to our families. I have no responsibility to my community, and I believe in community. I believe community is invaluable, and in some ways, I think it's almost impossible to live without. I think it's possible, but it's almost impossible to live without. Community is so valuable. Homeschool parents hurt their communities when they isolate themselves and remove their children from academic institutions. Yes. Yes, it does hurt the academic institution. That is for a good reason. If I get involved and I see that there's a store that I'm going to and they are doing illegal or illicit practices that are nefarious and criminal in nature, I am going to pull my support from that place. Are they going to suffer? Yes. Why? Why, Mr. Dan, are these schools and academic institutions having a problem? Because it is a free market. And if the market cannot produce something that is accurate to what it says it should be able to do, then people should be able to pull their support from it in lieu and light of any other thing that they want to do. You see, this is a beautiful thing we're seeing. Not some detriment to the public school. You see, the public school is starting to die. Because more and more people are realizing, I can bring my kid home and do a better job. We'll talk a minute about the teacher who grabs the kindergartner's face. But we're beginning to recognize that we cannot love, I mean, a teacher cannot love or care or enjoy or know our kids any better than we can. If we don't help the system will not work. You know, there's an old saying that says sometimes you can't cure stupid. You know, and I don't necessarily believe that. I do believe that stupid can be, when people are ready, stupid can be undone. Dan's a little stupid. I don't mean that hurtfully. I know you're like, well, how can you not mean that stupid? I really don't. But Dan is stupid. If we don't help the system will not work. Okay. If you have something that is so convoluted and so complex that it doesn't work and it does not function, why would you do that? You know, I frequently get asked, because I'll just absolutely piss people off when we talk about this idea of this public education. Well, what would you do, Trey? How would you fix the system? My answer is almost identical to Jack Spierko's. I wouldn't. If something is so trashed and broken and destroyed, if there is a house that is sitting there that's in the middle of the town, everybody thinks and they're like, oh, how should we fix up this house? But I go in this house and it's a pier and beam, and the pier and beam is shifted offset and it's rotting, and there's termites in the wall and there's water damage all over, and the roof hasn't been on there and it's ruined all of the insulation, and the electrical stuff is not up to code and is corroded and rotted, and there are bugs and stuff all over the place, and we're talking like, you know, nasty little bugs, and there are, you know, just holes in the floor, and there's all of this stuff that's doing to it, and it's sagging, and literally a strong gust could knock this thing over. And you walk up to me and say, well, how are you going to fix this? I'm going to let it fall. I'm going to bulldoze that son of a biscuit to the ground and sell the land or build on top of it to make a new house. I might even burn it. But I'm not going to try to save something that is crumbling. You see, the system is crumbling. It is falling apart. And if we cannot get ourselves to a point that we can recognize that this system is, in fact, falling apart, we're not going to be able to make something new. This educational system was built on an 1800s Prussian model. It was designed to create kids or create workers that did what they were told. Go look it up. This system sucks. People are recognizing it, and they're pulling their kids home to say, you know what, if you teachers, as good as you say you are, aren't going to fix it, if you're going to sit there and whine to me as to why the system won't let you teach the way that you want to teach, then you don't have the balls to do what it needs to be done. For my kid, I'll do it myself. This is one of those subjects that I always get so sore about every time we talk about it. And frankly, it's not because the system's failing. I don't care that it's such a horrible system that it's failed. What I care about is these teachers that continue to baste themselves in this model and roll around in it and then sit there and say, well, we're good people. We still love kids. So freaking what? If you love kids and you don't love them enough to do what needs to be done to help them learn in the best possible way, then do something else other than just sit there and serve a system that we know doesn't work? If that's what you constitute as loving kids, then I'm not interested in you loving on mine. Easily. My wife could go out and make as much money as I do, if not more. Easily. She's whiz-bang intelligent. Considerably more intelligent on the scales that we've tested her on than I am. But we have made a choice that we're going to have her come home and she's going to educate these kids through this unschooling model to provide them with everything that they need to do and show them how to live life. And it has cost us. We do not have brand new cars. We've had to buy over a 100-year-old house, which I love this house. We'll try to get some pictures up for you guys pretty soon. But we love this house, but it ain't brand new. We ain't ever going to live on that neighborhood. And that's most of that's out of choice, but they don't typically like chickens and ducks, but and shooting. But anyway, we're just not going to have many of those things. But we've counted that cost, and we've decided those kids are worth it, and we're going to provide them the things that they need to go out and be just as successful, if not more successful, if not considerably more successful than we have ever been. But we're willing to count that cost because it is that important to us. I'm sorry I get so fired up about this topic, but man, this one just frustrates me. Number two, going back to the letter from Dan, you mock the idea of socialization. But the fact is that kids need to learn how to socialize. That skill is not ingrained in them. And how can they learn proper social skills if they aren't around other children? Because, oh my God, school is the only place there's children. You might as well try to teach your kid how to swim without ever putting him in a pool. Holy crap, you're right. That's right. The only way you can... Oh, sorry. Too soon. If it's most important for kids to learn the academic fundamentals, but learning proper socialization is very important as well. Public school gives you young people the chance to become well-adjusted adults. Oh, Dan. You mock the idea of socialization, but the fact is kids need to learn how to socialize. You know, this is, one of the worst things that an argument can do is that when they mix an element of truth, grains of truth in with lies, or grains of truth in with erroneous belief. So here is the phrasing. The fact is kids need to learn how to socialize. This is absolutely and most emphatically a true statement. However, what Mr. Dan is doing here is that he's also mixing this with an assumption. The assumption is kids need to be socialized, and the best way they can be socialized is to put them in a public school. Right? The skill is not ingrained in them. That's right. We absolutely have to teach kids how to socialize. How can they learn proper social skills if they aren't around other children? Here is where the stupidity drops. The mentality that we are in a position that the only place that kids can receive socialization is through public school education system is a lie. That is a lie. Kids can get socialized in other places outside of schools. We live in a very small town. We're close to a very large town. We keep our kids active and involved in any things we want. There are social events through churches. There are social events through thousands of other things. And what I have actually found is that kids are better able to strike a balance in their socialization through this than they are through public schools. You know, one of the most interesting things is people talk about like the social skills that kids need. My kids have the best social skills that I've ever seen. We go to a park, a random public park. And we open the doors and we get out. The first things that my kids say is, oh, man, I wonder who I'm going to make friends with today. And my kids will run out there, and within 5 freaking minutes of being at a public park, they will have come back and said, oh, Dad, this is my friend. Her name is Ivy. She lives here. And they go out and play for the rest of the time. Sometimes I wish I could take a photo of it and walk up to every person who throws this stupid who's going to build my road socialization, mentality in homeschooling and just smack them with it. Just smack them. I mean, just pop right across the face. Sometimes I wish I could do. The mentality that you must go to public school to get socialized is a lie. Not only that, I would actually go as far to argue that you get some of the absolute worst socialization that you can get in public schools. You get bullies. You get unmetered access to your kids at all times from bullies. And they can't always get around that. Girls pulling girls' hair, calling people four eyes, etc., so on and so forth. Yes, I do believe in kids learning how to handle themselves in these situations. But do I want to do that at their tender young ages when they are still trying to figure out themselves? No. Do I want them to one day be able to grow up to where they get to a point to where they can absolutely handle these things? Yes. Do I want them doing that in a period of time when they're supposed to be able to learn and educate themselves? No. The reality is that bullying is a stressful event. Stress releases a chemical called cortisol in the brain of little kids and adults as well. Cortisol, the stress hormone, when it gets released, has a tendency to block memory retention. Does this sound like a good mix to you? No. I want my kids' education to be the least stressful time of their day. Do I want them eventually to get tangled up with some bullies? Heck yes, I do. I want them to know how to handle them in a heartbeat. I want them to know. The public school is not the best way to do it. Anyway, y'all can go back if y'all want to read Matt's response to that. It wasn't bad. Matt and I would get along just fine in terms of what we believe about homeschooling. Several of the agreements and several of the ideas that we have here are actually pretty synonymous. Dan is stupid, and he can be unstupid if he wants to be. But the reality is his arguments really are. I mean, I hate saying the absolute worst arguments against homeschooling like Matt Walsh picked for his title, but he's right, and he's spot on. Those are horrible arguments. They're one of the arguments that are the most commonly used over and over and over, but they're the most simple. They seem to be the most simple, and they have very simple answers as well that are typically pretty converse to that. So anyway, speaking of, let's talk about the article. Let's see, who sent this in to me? I believe it was Zoe was her name, Z-O-E, Zoe. Zoe sent me this one. It says, camera catches teacher grabbing kindergartner by the face. If you haven't seen this video, you need to go watch it. But the short side of it all is this little kiddo, they've got video footage of a teacher, got this little kiddo out in the hall on video camera. Now, I don't know what the story is here. I don't know what happened. This little boy may have been a total turd butt. Let's be honest, he may have cute little blue eyes, but he could be a little demonic terror, metaphorically speaking. And so we don't know the situation behind that. We don't know that we wouldn't want it to act the same situation in this situation. Regardless, this is not acceptable. And I'm not talking like, oh, shame, shame, shame. I'm talking, man, this is not going to happen again. Because if it does, it's going to get rough for you. This is physical violence. This is encroaching on a human being's space and right to not be hurt. So we are talking about, there are very few things that are rights broken. People talk about, this is my right to do this. You know what? Bullcrap. It's a privilege, maybe. The only real right that I see is the right to choose. In most other cases, so long as that choice that you're making is not hurting someone else without good reason or is not damaging somebody else's property, as long as that choice doesn't do one of those two things, it's fine. However, in a case like this, you are violating a kid's right to not be hurt. This is not okay. And I'm going to be honest, guys. Oh, well, this is just one lady. I'm telling you, it is happening in your school. It is happening in your school. I don't know exactly what it is. It may not be face grabbing, but there is some level of abuse of a person's right to choose their life without being hurt or physically aggressed against. It is happening in your dadgummed public school. I used to work for a company where I went into schools and I used to do therapy with kids. And I'm telling you, I saw it in every single one of the schools, from the high school all the way down to the kindergartners. It is happening in your school as well. Can your kid get through it? Sure they can. Is this boy going to be fine? I sure hope so. I think he's probably going to be just fine. Do I want it happening to my kid? No, I do not. See, that's the issue here. Is for every one of you, quote-unquote, good teachers, I really do believe there's teachers out there that have great hearts. For every one of you good teachers, and I'm only giving you a passive good teacher, there are some of you out there that are actually great teachers, that are bucking the system, that are fighting against it tooth and nail, and frankly, you're just bucking the system. You're just pushing against and rebelling in every instance you can, and just telling people what you need to tell them to make it look like you're doing what you're, quote-unquote, supposed to. You are great teachers. Most of you are just good teachers. You're doing exactly what the system taught you to do, and you're just doing it anyway, even though you wish you could do it differently. You're just a good teacher. But there are some of these out there, and there are some in your school now, that are horrible. They are horrible people. The anger that they have, they will allow it to come out into physical violence onto their, I guarantee they'll do it to their own kids, but onto your kid. Grabbing their faces, doing whatever else. I have seen a full-grown adult shouting at an 8-year-old boy in his face, wagging that finger at him. God, I was too young and too stupid at the time to not walk over there and to break that man's finger myself. Should have. Wish I would have. This should not be happening. But it is. This is why I say it is parents' fault. It is parents' fault. I will agree with Dan from the previous article. That is an issue. That we are subjecting ourselves to a public system where this exists. And this happens. And I take responsibility for that myself. And I did that by making sure my kids don't set foot in the halls of a place where they could get their little faces grabbed. Let's see. Next, and I do believe the last article that we are going to go over today, 7-year-old boy is kicked out of school for groping girl. Now, I'm going to approach this one very carefully, because I've got to make sure that I come out very close. So let me read it first. A 7-year-old boy was removed from his elementary school after he allegedly groped an 8-year-old female classmate on 2 separate occasions. According to Kimberly Weiss, the victim's mother, the first time her daughter was groped, the boy was suspended for a day and then allowed back into the same classroom as her daughter. But the second time her daughter was assaulted, she said the principal gave her 2 choices. The boy could either be transferred to a different classroom or the daughter could switch schools. Yes, she was told her daughter could switch schools after being groped. After adding insult to injury, Weiss said the principal asked her daughter why she didn't just punch the boy in the face after the incident. The district eventually stepped in and the boy was removed from school and did... but not before Kimberly sent out flyers to each and every parent in the class explaining the situation and warning them that their children could be at risk also. So anyway, I'm gonna let you guys read the rest of this, but I want to address a few things here. First off, should this have ever happened to this little girl? Absolutely, 100%. No way ever this should have happened to her. People do not deserve that. If you want to talk about encroaching on somebody, that is absolutely a textbook case in definition of what it is to encroach on someone else. Doing something to someone else without express permission from them is not okay. And when you do that, you break a fundamental right, not just a privilege, a fundamental right to be able to feel safe, to pick the life that you want to pick. And if she had no desire to be groped, that's a big problem. We'll try, what if she wanted to be groped? She's too young for that. I do agree. It is way too young for 7-year-olds to be groping each other, but if there is a consensual choice in that, this is just an educational piece. Hey, it is not okay to grope each other. Hey, it is not okay to let boys grope you. Here's why. We explain and educate. This is not a right issue. In this case, the 7-year-old girl did not want to be touched, and yet she was again. This is a problem. So, should she have ever been touched? Absolutely not. Is this little boy breaking a fundamental perspective? I absolutely think so. However, I want to jump to 2 sides to this. Why does this little girl not know how to shut this dude down? Well, Trey, she's physically smaller. You know what? You keep feeding kids that bullcrap line for the rest of their life, they're going to think that they're always going to have some big buddy boy to come save them for the rest of their life. You have got to understand, personal security does not begin at someone else. If we sit there and wait for someone else to come save us, the reality is they probably won't make it in time. It's one of those classic examples. Like, for instance, whenever it talks about calling the police, it says whenever an intruder is seconds away, a police officer is minutes, right? Or no, what does it say? When seconds count, police are minutes away. You see what I'm saying? The mentality is that the ideology and the belief systems of personal responsibility of the protection of self must be on the individual level. The principal said, why didn't she just punch the boy in the face? While I'm not necessarily advocating the application of physical force in all situations, why not? I can guarantee you he gets a good sock in the nose. He's going to really seriously rethink about it. Why were other folks in the class not stepping to her aid? Oh, well, Trey, they're just 7 years old. Well, holy crap. I'm so glad that we're raising a whole bunch of little tiny sheep, little lambs that we can just throw in there. And then one wolf that finally figures out that he can run around groping all the different sheep that are inside the pasture. Well, they're just going to take it. They're going to deal with it. Why are our kids not learning how to take care of themselves? Why do our kids not learn self-defense? Why, by 7 years old, does our kid not understand at least basic level of self-defense? Because we're waiting for someone else to come save us. In most cases, that's the answer. We don't want to take self-responsibility for our personal safety. We want to walk in that beautiful, blissful lie that somebody's going to come and save us, a police officer, a fireman. Don't get me wrong. They have wonderful jobs, and I appreciate what they do. But they cannot make it to all situations. And principals and teachers are absolutely no different. We must be responsible for ourselves. What do we teach this little girl? This little girl that got assaulted has learned now she can't take care of herself. She needs mommy and daddy and principal to come in and remove the kid from the classroom. We need to teach our kids to learn how to be responsible for themselves. We need to teach our kids to know how, if somebody grabs them and touches them, you teach them how to shut them down. Not even necessarily physically. In some cases, what they need is just to be understanding, you will not touch me again. They touch again, after you have warned them once, break their face. I'm telling you, these kind of kids like this grow up to be predators if they do not learn that there are boundaries for what they do. And they do nothing but get smarter and more conniving. If they do not learn, I'll shut you down. And I will shut you down so hard, you will think twice before you do it to anyone a second time. But our kids are soft. They're soft emotionally, they're soft mentally, and they're soft physically. I'm not talking about throwing them into a boot camp at 8 years old or anything like that. I'm not talking about teaching them to be, you know, special forces operators that can kill people with one finger. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the basic level to be able to assert themselves. See, that's what it really comes down to. It's mindset. Kids that know how to say, not again. Maybe in some cases they'll set that foot down. They'll get the crap beat out of them. It's okay. We learn from that. We learn how to get smarter next time. Guys, I'm not a proponent for violence. I do believe that violence solves problems in some cases, but I believe that there always should be a peaceful solution we look at first. And sometimes that peaceful solution is, you will not do that to me again. And it's not going to come with the threat of a principal. It's not going to come with the threat of mommy coming and saving me. Not even another classmate. Maybe classmates will rally around him. It needs to come from, you will not do that to me because I said so. But we always want somebody, big brother, right? We always want the government. We always want the governing body to come save us. We need for our kids to learn that they are capable of handling themselves and dealing with these problems. That doesn't mean they don't come to us for support. That doesn't mean that in some cases, if it got life-threatening, that we don't step in. But we help kids solve problems. We help kids think. We help kids assert themselves. Or just take them out of public schools. All right, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Guys, I think I should be back in the saddle this week. I'm sorry for the interruptions that we've had over the last few weeks. It has been nuts. But let me tell you, I walked out of my office to go grab the power supply in the middle of recording this just a second ago, and it was one of the first times that I walked from my office to the house, and there were no boxes or junk in the way. Just a straight walk from my office to the house. It was wonderful. If nothing else, stay tuned for this Wednesday. We should have our next episode of the Hemi Podcast, as well as this Friday. Jeff and I should be back in the saddle for our next episode of the Real Family Guys Podcast. You guys have a great day, great week. We'll see you guys on Wednesday.